And welcome to episode 64 of the Knitting Pretty podcast. It is May 29th, 2016. My name's Em. Oh, picking up the cat. There we go. Hi, my name's Em. I already said that, but you know. Anyway, you can find me on the internet as Knitfast Die Cozy, particularly Ravelry and Instagram, also Pinterest and Twitter, although I admit I kind of forget to check my Twitter notifications, so oops. Oh well. Anyway, there are show notes on my blog at emmaknits.net under the podcast tab, and there is a Facebook page, which is the thing I update first when I'm making, like, episode going live type announcements, which you can find at facebook.com/emmaknits. There's also a Ravelry group, which you can find by searching the Knitting Pretty podcast in the tab, or in the groups tab. Oh my goodness, I'm tired. It has been a long time since the last episode. I missed a week there. I'll get to that later in the obsessions segment, because we should probably get on with the, like, actual crafting and stuff at the beginning of the podcast, yes? Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for sticking with me and being great listeners. I so enjoy you guys. I was looking through my Instagram feed recently for the perhaps odd reason of trying to remember exactly what my husband does look like with a beard. The chemo caused a obvious hair loss. I mean, that's kind of what it does. But he's been missing his beard for some time, and I wanted a reminder of what the beard looks like because I'm super ready for it to be back. And the most recent picture of him with it is the one where I mentioned to all of you guys on Instagram that what was going on with the testicular cancer and everything. And just the outpouring of support from people I know and people I've never met, and, you know, that we've only met over the internet, and people local and very not local. Just how kind you guys all were, and I just was reading over that again, and I felt so loved and supported, and just thanks for being there. For all the good times and the not so good times, you guys have been really wonderful, and you are the reason why I record this podcast. I enjoy knitting and spinning and crafting and all that stuff, but, you know, talking to myself about it, well, I could do that without the microphone. I do that without the microphone. It's the introvert's problem. We talk to ourselves. I've never met an introvert who doesn't talk to themselves. At least a little bit. Anyway, so thank you for being wonderful, basically. And thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's hop right in to the crafting. In my past, I have two things. The first is my Vianne cardigan by Andy Satterlund, which I knit out of Barocco Vintage DK. I used about 2.5 skeins to knit the 33-inch bust size. The pattern recommends anything from 0 to 3 inches of negative ease. 33 inches gave me 3 inches exactly of negative ease. And while that is within the pattern's recommendations, I find that that's actually a little too small for me. But that's okay. It's not too small. It's just smaller than I would have liked. It's kind of a combination of me getting used to a different body and different tastes in how I like to dress it. And also, just kind of, you know, sometimes knitting doesn't go quite the way you hope it will. But that's not to say I don't love the sweater. So I do. I really do. As usual, I like to do a little run over the pattern and the yarn when I finish a big project. So, review of the pattern. Great. Overall, awesome. I will be buying more of Andy Satterlund's patterns. I liked the pattern a lot. There was one thing about the way it was written that I found odd, in that it had basically just more notation than I felt was necessary in one thing. Like, it, you know, said it was on the rest rows, on the purl rows, on the back of the sweater, because the lace is only knit on the outside rows, not the inside rows. And it, instead of saying just, you know, purl to end, it went through all the different segments, the panels, so work chart B across these stitches, work chart A across these stitches, work chart B across these stitches, purl to end. And it was all purling. And so it could just all say purl. Like, that's literally my only complaint with the pattern, which is a fiddly, stupid little complaint. But nevertheless, it did confuse me a bit. I was like, why am I being told to work chart B? Isn't it just purling? Oh, well. Okay. Like, I felt like I was doing something wrong. When I wasn't. But that's just me. Everything else about the pattern was great. The size range was good. The instructions for how to do everything was good. I didn't really follow the instructions for the button band for how many stitches to pick up. I didn't want to figure out what her gauge had been for the... Well, no. What it was is that I switched to twisted rib rather than a regular 1x1 rib on the bottom of the sweater and the button bands. And I didn't want to figure out what her gauge was for the ribbing versus what my gauge was in twisted ribbing. I just wanted to pick up 2 stitches for every 3 along the front of the cardigan. So I did. And it worked out great. Basically, I did my usual thing where I just kind of got tired of following the pattern. I got a lot farther in this pattern before I got tired of following it, though. So I think that's a testament to the goodness of the pattern, isn't it? That I got as far as the button band before I just completely dropped it. I did one thing in the button band that the pattern doesn't recommend, doesn't specifically recommend, just doesn't mention. But I had heard about it on another podcast. Who was it? It might have been The Charm of It. It might have been someone else. Really, at this point, I'm so behind in podcasts that it was probably either Eva on The Charm of It or Amy Beth on The Fat Squirrel Speaks, because I've been keeping up best with them, was to, when you do your buttonholes and your buttons, rather than to have them right down the center of the button band, knit them one row or so in towards the sweater so that when the sweater is on and inevitably it pulls open a little bit at the buttons, then it looks like the buttons are centered. It, like, when that negative ease kicks in, which with a sweater with 3 inches of negative ease, it's gonna kick in if you do up the buttons, it makes the buttons look centered. I wonder if I made up where I heard that. Maybe I just... whatever, it doesn't matter. They're great podcasts, even if they didn't say that. So go check them out. But yeah, so that is one thing I did. I knit the buttons like a row in, basically a row less on the sweater side of the button band, and then a row more on the bind off side of the button band, I guess. Does that make sense? Basically, I knit 3 rows, did the button band, and then instead of knitting another 3 rows, I knit 5. Not the button band. Jeez, the buttonholes. I'm trying. I'm really trying. Anyway, great pattern. Loved it. I'm very happy with the sweater. I don't have buttons for it yet, but I wanted to count it as finished because it is wearable without buttons. And I just can't quite decide what I wanted of the buttons. The sweater is gray, and I do have some buttons on hand that are just in kind of a nondescript metallic bronzy browny color. So I could use those, but I don't want to. I'm trying to decide if this sweater needs a color pop with the buttons, or if it needs something that doesn't pop. And I'm leaning towards color pop. I'm leaning towards either yellow or orange or red. A warm pop. Anyway. But I haven't decided yet which color, so I'm just not for now. I'll wait. There's a sale on at the fabric store and they have buttons, so I'll probably go pick some up sometime this week. But yeah, I think yellow would be really nice. I have some really cute yellow buttons that I took off a store-bought cardigan when it was no longer going to be mine, when I decided to get rid of it. And really cute, like little yellow enamel buttons on a gold base, but they're too tiny, unfortunately. They'd look cute on the sweater if I was wearing it open, but I don't think they would actually work as buttons. So that's no good. But I put them just on the band of the sweater to look at, and they looked super cute. So I'm leaning towards yellow. Gray and yellow are a thing, right? Still? I feel like gray and yellow might be getting old, but I don't know if I care. I still really like it. The yarn, Barocco Vintage DK, is what it is. It's a workhorse yarn that's great for children's garments in particular. I bought it because it was cheap, and I needed a large amount of yardage for it, and since then, I've shrunk and didn't need all that yardage, and I was able to make sweaters for my niece and my daughter and myself out of it. A small sweater for me, but still. But I, again, machine washed and dried my daughter's sweater in vintage, like in that same colorway and everything today, and marveled at how beautifully it came out of the dryer. Like, the lace, you know, puckered up a little bit. It doesn't look as nice as it did when it was freshly blocked, but other than that, it looks awesome. It hasn't pilled, it hasn't, I don't know, it's fine. It's, like, in great condition. So, I will say that for this yarn, if you want a hard-wearing piece of clothing, Vintage DK is a good yarn for that. Although, I can only recommend the light gray for that, because I did have the pea soup color and the sort of darker green in the heathered colorway pilled like the dickens. The light green didn't at all, but the dark green flex pilled right out of the sweater. So, who really knows about that? But the gray I can recommend. I finished another thing. I finished a brioche for beginners cowl, which is a pattern that I wrote, and it's a free pattern on Ravelry, should you wish to also do some brioche. It's very simple. It's just a cowl, just a tube. You cast on, you knit, you cast off. Like, it's so simple. There's a reason it was for free. But I think I did a fairly reasonable job, considering it's just a written pattern and not, like, a video tutorial, of explaining how to do brioche. So if you want to try brioche from a pattern, that might help you. If it doesn't, that's okay. I'm sorry. I tried. Anyway, the pattern calls for less stitches than I cast on. I'm not really sure how many I cast on. I just cast on what seemed like a really nice big cowl, and then joined in the round. That's kind of how I roll when I'm not really feeling like paying attention to a pattern. And, you know, I didn't even pay attention to casting on an even number of stitches. I just cast on the stitches I want and then started working, and it wasn't even, so I knit two together, and then it was. I'm kind of a cheater that way. Anyway, I knit it out of the Kayuni / Connie handspun that I have. It's from Pencil Roving that is in a rainbow colorway. I bought it on Etsy, and it comes from Estonia, and it's cheap and colorful and relatively soft, and I love it. And handspun. And then the contrast color was a natural sheepy white Cotswold wool blended with alpaca from a local farmer, and just lovely stuff, very shiny with a really strong halo. The alpaca totally haloed, and the Cotswold is all shiny and strong. The yarn is so strong that it hurts to try and break it with your hands. So the contrast between the two is really nice, because you got the really bright, colorful, slightly fluffy yarn, and then the sleek, halo-y, drapey white yarn on the background of the brioche. They worked really well together, and I basically knit until I ran out of the white, and then decided that I hadn't quite gotten enough colors in on the rainbow. I'd gotten from, like, a hat that started with a tiny bit of blue, and then purple, red, orange, yellow, green, and I was still in the green when I ran out of the white. So I thought, well, I need to get some blue in, so I've got a full repeat of the rainbow. And so I just kept on working the brioche in a single color, because why not? It's my knitting. I can do what I want. And it looks awesome. Particularly what I had planned originally on being the inside of the cowl, the white side, that just shows the rainbow through the brioche ribs, looks really neat because it's got this sort of peak of rainbow through it, and then it's got a band at either the top or bottom, probably the top, of green and blue. And it keeps the same texture and the same shape and size and everything. It just stops having the white worked into it, and so it becomes more intense colored. And it's really neat. I really like it. I feel the need to experiment with more stripy brioche. I could just look at pictures of what Stephen West does, I suppose. That would also fill my brioche stripy needs. Whatever. Anyway, the cowl's lovely. It's sitting on my ironing board drying right now after a good wash. And it's fluffy and squishy and oversized. And I love it. I'm looking forward to wearing it. I'm not looking forward to winter and being cold again, but it will be nice to wear it in the winter. I think it'll look very fun under a more laid-back, simple, maybe just black or gray coat with fun rainbow poking out. In my present, there is nothing. I'm between projects. I cast off the brioche cowl on Friday night and couldn't decide what to work on today or Saturday, and mostly just did chores. Bleh. And so I haven't cast on anything new. I have maybe a pair of vanilla socks coming up if I can't think of anything else. That's basically my fallback. If I can't think of anything else, I pull out a skein of self-striping and knit socks. But I would like to cast on a sweater. I don't know. I do have a couple patterns in my future, though. The first is Aquina by Carrie Robb. It's from the most recent Brooklyn Tweed collection that came out on May 10th, I think. And the collection was lovely. I really liked it. I thought it was beautiful. There was very little in it that I wanted to knit. This is the only pattern in it that I actually wanted to make. Which is fine. I totally enjoy the Brooklyn Tweed patterns, even if I don't necessarily want to make them. I think they're beautiful and they're beautifully styled. But they're not always me. So this Aquina, whatever, thing is either a scarf or a wrap or even a kind of throw. Like, it's a big rectangle, basically, and there's a couple different sizes of giant rectangle you can make. Let's call it a stole. And it's just got really intricate cables. It's otherwise just a rectangle. But yeah, beautiful cable pattern on it, and it is photographed in this gorgeous, gorgeous, slightly purpley toned cherry red that just, like, makes my mouth water. It's so pretty. So I think I would like to have something like that. I think for the winter that would be lovely to have a big, cushy wrap, giant rectangle that I can just wrap myself up in and pin with a shawl pin and call it a sweater. Because, you know, sometimes you don't need a sweater. The next pattern that I've queued is Emily, by Ellen Berglund. It's a simple cardigan. It's knit top down. It's got set-ins, not contiguous. They're picked up sleeves, but they look like a set-in sleeve, but they're top down set-in sleeves. You know, the ones you don't have to seam in, they just look like you did. The ones the same as on the Amelie cardigan. And I'm not going to knit this sweater right away, even though it would really suit, or not Amelie, Vian. This is Emilie. Oh my goodness, French names are just all the same in my head, apparently. Anyway, I'm not going to knit this sweater right away, even though it really fits into what I would like to have in my wardrobe, because it's almost exactly the same knitting process as the Vian cardigan, and I just knit that. But, it's gorgeous. It's got sleeves, it's got a really wide size range, from 27.5 inches to 64 inches around the bust. So that is an awesome size range. It's the pattern is divided into two files, one for the smaller sizes and one for the bigger sizes, so it's not, like, ridiculously long with all the different options. And then it also comes in three different length options, which is great because it means that what I want is a cropped cardigan. But what you may want might be a long cardigan, and this pattern has all of that, and a medium one. So that's cool. I like it a lot. I think it's a versatile pattern, and it looks like it's really well thought out. It's got a rounded, lower than scoop neck, but medium height scoop neck. Sorry, lower than crew neck. Medium height scoop neck, and lace panels down the front. The next cardigan I also queued is similar, again, in style. It's got a lace front, and it's a cardigan, and it's kind of cropped. It's called Belmont, and it's by Gudrun Johnston. It's got an all-over lace pattern on the front, and the sleeves are sewn in, I believe. It's also, both Emily and Belmont are knit in fingering weight yarn, which is my favorite weight for a cardigan. And, it's just a simple, pretty, nicely shaped cardigan. I like it a lot. I, again, don't know if I'll knit it right away because who knows? Who really knows? I can't make up my own decisions, let alone make a decision on the fly and then stick with it. That would be crazy. But it's a nice sweater, and I think it would fit really well into my wardrobe. It's a practical pattern choice for me. I thought I would talk for show and tell today a little bit about garment care. And I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but not everybody's listened forever, and maybe you've forgotten, because it has been over 2 years since I started this, which is kind of a long time, actually. And I washed all of my hand-knit socks today, like literally all of them, because I ran out. There were no clean socks to wear. So my office smells all woolly, and I thought, with the memory of good garment care in my head, maybe I would talk about it a little bit for those of you who might be newer to knitting and need some advice, or, you know, just those of you who might want a reminder, a little refresher. So the first and probably most important step in really good garment care for hand knits, hand-sewn garments, store-bought garments, everything, is proper washing. And that means keeping in mind what it says on the tag, but also going beyond that a little bit. Most things can be washed. Very few things truly need to be dry cleaned. Generally, the reason something needs to be dry cleaned is because it can't go in the machine wash, and people don't tend to hand wash. Silk can get wet. Think about it. You block a silk shawl, do you not? So silk can generally get wet. The kind of things that you don't want to get wet are things with really, really, really heavy embellishment. But most of the time, if you're buying clothes like that, like, they'd be like high-end couture garments. Those are the kind of things that if you can afford to buy it, you can afford to dry clean it. But you know, a cashmere sweater can be hand washed. A silk blouse, if you're careful, can be hand washed. Just ask the internet if you're not sure, because while you will get conflicting opinions, you will get good advice. It's also good to get a little bit of a background in fabric types and care thereof. One thing that people tend not to know is that rayon, which is in a lot of drapey fabrics, it's in some yarns, it's a really common fabric type, and or textile, like, component, and that includes bamboo. Anything that's a bamboo that isn't a scratchy feeling thing is going to be rayon from bamboo. Anything that's rayon is very, very delicate when wet. Sorry if you can hear a ticking sound. My cat is apparently angry that I exist underneath her and is, like, smashing her tail against the chair in ire. Because how dare I be sitting underneath her? Anyway. So rayon is very, very delicate when it's wet. That means if you put it in the dryer, it gets bashed around a lot while it's still wet and under high heat, and it's generally not a good idea. If you can gentle cycle rayon and then hang it to dry, you will be doing it a favor. Although, I do find that with a lot of 100% rayon things, particularly very shifty fabrics, if you're sewing with them, if you machine wash and dry them the first time before you actually use them, it makes it really soft. Rayon softens hugely when it gets machine dried. But it also damages it to some extent, and shrinks it. So anyway, that's just something to keep in mind. Rayon, very delicate. Linen, you can beat the crap out of, and it just keeps getting nicer. Doesn't matter. You will need to iron it, though. Silk is best. Silk is actually surprisingly versatile, but if one of your other pieces of clothing bleeds on it, it will pick up that dye if it's an animal fiber dye that it was on. So don't take risks with your silk. And don't iron it at too high of a heat, but it's not like it's going to melt. Be careful with any kind of synthetic and ironing. Start on an inconspicuous area because they can melt. Yeah, there's a lot to know about textiles, and I think it would even be wise to, if you can find a used textiles textbook, something like that, just if you're really curious about good garment care. Textiles as a class, like that's taught at the university level even, is really just like laundry 101. I know this because I've taken it. It's like a whole class in laundry, which is fine. It's kind of cool, but laundry is all it is. And so proper washing. Know what type of material you're washing and wash it accordingly. That means splitting up your wash loads more than you might want to. You just have to do it if you want your clothes to last. If you don't want your clothes to last, well, you get to do whatever you want. But if you have something you love and you really want it to last, or if you want to reduce clothing waste, then you really do need to do what it says. And that means that stretchy jeans, the spandex degrades in the dryer. That's why they say hang them to dry. Because even on low heat, a dryer actually is quite hot. So those jeans will degrade if you wash them on... if you dry them in the machine. I'm trying to think of any other, like, major ones that get damaged. Obviously, wool felts, but you all know that, you're knitters. Alpaca also felts. Angora felts like a bitch. You gotta watch out for that one. I know this because I felted an Angora sweater once. And then I was sad. What else? Yeah. That's about it. For the major pitfalls. But yeah, if you are interested in proper garment care, I strongly recommend looking up a textiles textbook. And I'm sure you would be able to find one in a local library. Or a used one. It doesn't need to be the most up-to-date thing. You're probably not going to be worrying too much about the most up-to-date tech fibers or something. Unless you are, in which case you don't need my help. The other thing about clothing care is don't overwash. If you don't spill something on your clothes, and no child throws up or wipes their gross nose on your clothes, and you don't sweat horribly into those clothes, like basically if they're not workout clothes, they probably don't need to be washed. And I know that's really gross to some people, and I understand it's okay, it's a personal choice, but washing severely degrades your clothing, particularly machine washing, and it reduces their usable life significantly. There are lots and lots of clothes that are meant to only have a 15 wash life. So if you think about that, if you wear a certain pair of leggings, say, leggings in particular have a really short wash life, 9 to 15, sometimes 20. If you wear that leggings once a week and then you wash it, it's only going to last 15 weeks. That's not even 4 months. But if you can take them off, put them away nicely, make sure that they're not in a lump on the floor, and let them, particularly stretchy things, need some time to kind of bounce back. You shouldn't wear the same bra every day, that kind of thing. You can get away with not washing it and wear it again and again and, again if you really want to. And it'll really extend the life of your clothing. So if you're able to not overwash your things, you should consider it. I will make a gross admission here. I totally wear my hand-knit socks more than once. Unless something weird happens. If I walk outside in them, sometimes I will, first of all, I shouldn't walk outside in my hand-knit socks, but I do. If I step in something weird, obviously I wash them. If, I've gone for a long walk with the dog and I know that my feet were sweaty, I wash them. But if I just wore them, I just leave them out on top of the dresser and wear them again the next day. And, nobody dies. And my feet haven't rotted and fallen off yet. There's still time, I suppose. Anyway, so even hand-knit socks don't need to be washed every time. And it really does extend their life. And the dye stays in longer. Felting is reduced. It's just, all in all, a good plan. A knitted sweater really doesn't need to be washed every time. Like, really, really, really. mine tend to get 5 or 6 wears before I spill something down the front and have to wash them. The next step is after you've washed your clothes, drying, obviously, is what happens next. Most things benefit from being hung to dry or laid flat. You have to think if it's stretchy and you don't want it to lose its shape or stretch out, then you need to lay it flat to dry. But lots and lots of things can be hung to dry. And you can obviously save a lot of space if you hang things to dry. I tend to put like woven camisoles and men's button-down shirts, stuff like that. I put them all on hangers and hang them off one end of my drying rack, and then I can still fill it up with sweaters and, you know, get like 30 pieces of clothing on one little drying rack because of hangers. Bras obviously should be hung to dry. But yeah, just keep in mind whether the shape of it will change if it's hanging under its own weight, and dry it accordingly. Lots of things can be machine dried. Some of them like it better than others. Linen loves a good machine dry. It makes it soft and floppy, and if you iron it right away afterwards, it just looks awesome. Cotton will shrink. Linen will shrink a little bit too. But if you are aware that the cotton will shrink, you know, you can work with it. What else? Yeah, I mean, you all know your jeans shrink when you dry them, but then as long as you can get them back on, they stretch back out. That's the worst, when they shrink just past the point where you can really get them on. Ugh, I hate that feeling. But, yeah, so your options are many with drying. It's also good for the environment. And that's the other thing, is like the cost of a piece of clothing on the environment goes up significantly if you wash it really frequently, because the water, the electricity, all of that goes up, obviously. So it is an environmentally friendly choice, obviously, to wash less. But I still have a shower every day. Like, I still think that washing is key to social acceptance. But yeah, anyway. So drying is the next thing. And then for clothing care, I find the thing that comes up most often in a piece of clothing looking less nice than it used to is pills. Whether it's a wool sweater, obviously they pill. Wool socks pill like crazy, particularly on friction points like heels. But other garments pill too. I just fixed up a blazer that I have that's made of a knit fabric. It's a synthetic and cotton blend. I think it's got some viscose and rayon and cotton. It's kind of a funny blend, actually. Anyway, it pilled like crazy. It pilled where my purse strap sits. It pilled where my sleeve rubs my mouse pad. Like, just all the friction points pilled. And so I took the pills off it today, and it looks awesome. And I would just strongly recommend, when something starts to look a little run down, use your pill removal method of choice and see if that helps, because sometimes you don't even notice that it's pilling, it just looks kind of crappy. And this goes for commercially made garments as well. It generally is pilling. My favorite thing for removing pills is the Gleaner, Gleener. It's a abrasive pill remover. You can use a sweater stone, which is basically a piece of pumice, but this is just like a fussy version of a sweater stone. However, it does have 3 different heads on it. One is for really big, chunky sweaters. Like, I use it for a fingering weight and up, basically. And then for smaller than that, there's a medium-sized sandpaper grit. And then there's a really fine one, which is what I used for this blazer today, because the pills were teeny tiny, and it worked great. So if you do plan to maintain your clothing, your store-bought clothing as well as your knitted clothing, a Gleaner I would recommend. For just knitted things, a sweater shaver works great. It basically works under a similar principle to a men's electric razor with the rotating heads, but it's bigger and, well, bigger. That's about it. It's Knitpicks makes one that's cheap and works well. I have it. It's great. You just have to make sure that there are no actual bumps in the knitting, that the edges of yarn could get snagged up in the thing because it could cut the yarn. I've never had that problem, but I have looked at the thing enough, like I've taken it apart enough times to know that it could happen. A sweater stone is your other option. And then your final option, if you are very careful, and do be careful, is a razor, like you would use for your legs or face or whatever. And that's kind of my last-ditch thing, when something just won't depill. If you carefully go over it with a razor and make sure that you don't let the razor slip sideways at all, it's not going to cut the garment. It, of course, would take off any bumps. So don't, you know, razor over a sweater with baubles, because you will lose the baubles and then the sweater. But it does work really well. The next thing for garment maintenance is weaving in loose ends that have gotten, like, ends that have come out, or reseaming it. And that's, again, something can seem totally ruined because it's got a hole in it, and then you can realize that it's just an end that's come loose and you can stitch it up or go over a seam with a sewing machine or by hand. There is no shame in hand sewing. I think a lot of people think that, well, because they don't machine sew, because they don't sew their own clothes, they shouldn't try it, that it's too beyond their skill set, and it's not. Hand sewing is easy. You just go in and out with a needle, and it's very low barrier to entry, and it goes slowly. So if you screw up, you know, you've only screwed up a couple stitches before you've noticed. It's just not scary, and you can totally hand sew a seam on anything back into place, whether it's your coat or, you know, a pair of pants or a sweater. You can totally do that with a thread and needle. Keep an eye on your buttons. Buttons on commercially made garments come off these days. They're just not well put on. They generally need to be hand sewn back on at some point. I honestly, if I get something that has really great buttons and I don't want to risk losing them, particularly if it's vintage or something and there's no spare button, I will re-sew the buttons on just before anything happens, as a matter of course. The final stage in, you know, garment decay is if it needs darning or patching or reinforcing. If a knitted thing starts to wear thin, if the yarn has worn away so that it looks thin and delicate, but it's still there, for heaven's sakes, reinforce it before the hole happens, because you can totally just duplicate stitch along with that thin yarn, back and forth, and you will be basically re-knit the place that's worn thin, and you can save it. Darning something when a hole has actually appeared and there is no fabric in between is harder. I actually don't know how to darn socks. I've never had to. I've only had one pair of socks blow out, and I decided the color was so faded that I just threw them out. But there are many, many good tutorials on the internet for how to darn socks, and that also applies to elbows and knees, I suppose, as well. Cat's got her purr on. It's pretty cute. She's probably gonna bite me. But, obviously on sewn garments, it's not so much darning and reinforcing, it's patching that needs to be done. And you can do decorative patches. You can needle felt a patch onto a piece of clothing. There are lots of ways to patch your clothing that aren't, that are visible but are cute. And then also there are many tutorials for how to patch something from the inside, particularly jeans. The best way to patch a pair of jeans is to put a denim patch on the inside and then sew around it and then over it. Patched clothing will never look new and professional. You wouldn't want to wear it to court if you're a lawyer. But for general wear and for extending the life of a garment, there is nothing wrong with a patch. Anyone that has a problem with you wearing patched clothing shouldn't have an opinion on the matter, basically. The final stage of garment repair is either repurposing an item for something else. T-shirts make excellent dish rags, or saying goodbye. And sometimes that's what needs to happen. After you've really worn something out, there's not much you can do for it. There are lots of ways to recycle fabric from things. You can, wool felts and can be made into cat toys and stuff like that if you so desire. I have felted a couple of sweaters and then with every intention of making them into felted cat toys, put them away. I've never done it, but you know, I still could. Lots of things make good rags, though. And you can also use things to stuff other things, like toys, fix-up stuff toys, things like that. There are lots of little bits of things that can be repurposed, but I'll leave that up to you and your creativity. But it is true that if you properly maintain your clothing, you'll get a lot more life out of it, but at some point it will crap out. And that's just how it is, and sometimes you have to say goodbye. If your clothing has been made of animal fiber, it's probably compostable. Look into it with your local rules about things, or if you have a long-term compost heap, you might be able to do that. But other things mostly end up in the landfill. Not much you can do about it. Yeah, anyway, on that sad note, I guess that's garment care in a nutshell. But I really do strongly recommend applying the same standard of garment care that you would to your hand knits to your commercially bought things. You will find they last longer and look more beautiful for a longer amount of time. Okay, that's enough of that. On to my obsessions for the past 3 weeks. First is the reason that I didn't podcast last week. We went on vacation. This is the first vacation that wasn't about visiting my husband's family that we have taken since 2008. Which is a long time ago. We went to Tofino, which is a small coastal town that's about a 4 to 5 hour drive from here. It took longer than that because the kid threw up in the car the whole way. Ugh. Yuck. But, whatever. It's nobody's fault. Actually, it was totally her fault because she snuck a book out of her bag and was reading it. She's not very clever that way. Anyway, Tofino is lovely. It is a beautiful little town. It is on Long Beach, which is a surfer's paradise. Big waves, all that stuff. Lots of sand. I am not much of a surfer, so don't really care. And by not much of, I mean I've never done it and don't intend to. Which is not to say that you shouldn't, I just don't care about it. But beautiful beaches, gorgeous beaches, with shells and whatever, rocks and stuff. And there's hiking nearby, it's ecotourism at its best, whale watching, all of that stuff. We didn't bother with that, but if you ever want to go to a place where you can really absorb the beauty of the ocean and the forest and all of that good stuff, Tofino on Vancouver Island is lovely. Really beautiful, and we got great weather. It was fun. It was a vacation that my parents had given us as a Christmas gift, and it was for our family, myself and my husband and our daughter, and for my sister and her boyfriend. And so we all went up together. We spent lots of time together. We went out to dinner. We had amazing sushi. And just enjoyed hanging out a little bit. And we don't get to see them that often because they live nearby, but not super nearby. An hour away or so. And yeah, it was wonderful. It was great. I had a lot of fun. I wasn't really ready to come back to the real world afterwards, but there you go. You have to at some point. But anyway, we got back on Monday night at like 7. And I just didn't have it in me to podcast. So that's what happened with that. But it was wonderful to have a vacation. And we went to the aquarium in Euclid, which is near Tofino and is similar in, you know, just being a small town on the edge of the world. Great aquarium. Like, it's, you know, it's not like a big fancy aquarium, you know, some of the big ones that have tanks that you can walk inside and walk through tunnels with sharks on top. None of that. It's like one big room. It's a small town with a small town aquarium. But what they do for this aquarium, it's seasonal. They only open it in the spring, summer, fall, and then it's closed in the winter. They bring fish and stuff in from the local waters. And so it's all local things. And there's a surprising amount of beautiful, colorful, interesting fish right here in southern BC. And so we got to look at all of those. And then they have all sorts of open tide pool tanks where you can touch the things, see anemones, sea urchins. I picked up a sea urchin. They are as prickly as they look, but really cool, and they move surprisingly quickly. I mean, still really slowly, but they move. And when you put them underwater, all of these weird little, like, feeder tentacles come out of their spines. They're so cool. So cool. And, what else? Lots of anemones. And scallops. Little scallops. They actually do swim. It was very fun watching them scooting around. And, yeah, it was really, really neat. And they were bringing in jellyfish that they just caught off the dock while we were there. And putting them in the jellyfish tank, which you are not allowed to touch. Obviously, they don't deal well with that. And then one of the big jellyfish that was already there ate one of the new jellyfish, and we felt kind of bad for him. But I guess that's the circle of life. But anyway, it was a really neat aquarium. So if you are an island person, or you happen to be traveling to the island, and you're going anywhere near Euclid, and you are an adult, or have children with you, the Euclid Aquarium was awesome. I can't recommend it enough. It was super cool. I even, after we went to the aquarium, we went out to a sort of lighthouse near there, and there was rocks, and I even went, like, mini rock climbing all by myself. I've never been into that, but I guess newfound sense of balance has helped with being willing to climb up large faces of rock. But just, it was a great vacation. It was a great vacation for doing things we wouldn't normally do and seeing people we don't always see and eating so much sushi and Caesars. Sushi and Caesars are a surprisingly delicious combination. Anyway, my second obsession for this week is stewed rhubarb. One of the things that we did on the way back from Tofino was stop by my sister's house and pick up some rhubarb from her garden. Now, this rhubarb had gotten kind of woody and spongy and weird. It wasn't particularly red because her garden's a little overgrown and I don't think sun was getting to the right places. But it didn't matter. I had been planning on making a recipe from the Canning Kitchen cookbook by Amy Brawny, but I didn't have enough rhubarb. But this recipe is rhubarb, stewed rhubarb with vanilla bean seeds in it. So the little black flecks are in there, and then the rhubarb's all pink, and it's really pretty. But I didn't have enough rhubarb to make the recipe exactly as called for, and I find with canning recipes, if you mess with them too much, things go wrong. So I didn't do that. But I did take my bottle of cheapy vanilla extract and just put like a blorp of that in with the rhubarb. I had about 800 grams of rhubarb, and I put in just over a cup of sugar, and then, I don't know, a sploosh of vanilla. Like, I don't measure. I knit and make recipes rather in the same way. It's why I'm a terrible baker, actually. Anyway, so this rhubarb was a little subpar, but the vanilla addition to the rhubarb is unbelievably good. Like, so, so good. I cannot even begin to tell you how delicious this stuff is. Because stewed rhubarb is wonderful. If you've never made it and you have access to rhubarb right now, I strongly recommend. It's easy. You just make it. Ask the internet, it'll tell you. But vanilla is like the perfect flavor complement to rhubarb. Rhubarb is tangy and floral tasting and kind of like hibiscus tea tasting almost, and then the vanilla, it has this like smooth creamy note on top, and oh my god, so good. I'm so excited. I made quite a bit of rhubarb. I got about 4 cups out of it, and so I'm going to portion it out over the next week or so and enjoy it on oatmeal in the morning, and I'm going to be the happiest breakfast haver ever. Yum. My final obsession is I finally got some herbs to put in some hanging planters I bought from IKEA this Christmas, and they're cute little white planters. I have to have everything, if it's a plant in the house, it has to be hanging, because otherwise the cat will eat it. Now that she's arthritic and kind of bad at jumping, I don't know that she would be able to get to most shelves in the house, but I'm not risking it. I will wait until she passes on before I take that risk. Anyway, so I got some hanging planters at Christmas, and I finally put herbs in them, and I'm so excited. They bring me such joy every time I look at them. I got a Greek oregano and a small leaf basil. I figured that would be more hardy than your typical big leaf basil. And a garlic chives. And they're hanging in my window, and they look happy, and I love them. So that's really exciting for me. For some reason, having houseplants is equated with being an adult in my mind, and so they are my proof of adulting, houseplants. The other plant news is that I was given a peony plant from someone else's garden about 5 years ago. And I planted it in the garden of the place we were living in at the time, and it grew leaves for the two to three years we had it there, but it didn't flower. And I figured it was in the shade and it couldn't. And so when I moved up to the place that we're in now, I brought it with me and planted it in the garden here, which is just, again, in the shade. But it's more, it's a raised garden as opposed to a garden by a lowered basement below grade window. So it's got a little more chance of getting sun. And still didn't bloom. And this year it bloomed. And so this peony, I have been waiting on it for 5 years, and it finally bloomed, and it's this glorious, beautiful, big, bright pink flower with the center petals have some darker pink stripes in them. And it's everything that I could have hoped for and more, and I'm so excited. And of course, it bloomed right when we went away to Tofino. So I got a picture of the bud kind of opening and then went away. Came back and it was perfect and huge and wonderful, and then we had a windstorm and it blew the one big flower over and broke the stem. So I brought it inside and it's been beautiful for a couple days. It's about at the end of its life, but still, I'm just like so happy that this thing finally bloomed. After 5 years of coddling and wondering what I'd done wrong, I guess it just got the right weather combination and just the right amount of sun coming around the corner and it made flowers. I hope it will again next year. That would be exciting. Anyway, that is me for today. Sorry, there was sort of minimal crafting content considering the craftingness of the podcast. Hopefully next time I'm a little more on the ball with that. We're almost at the end of the quarter for the thing along. If you don't know what the thing along is, go check out the thread in the Ravelry group. It's an along, but it's not really a craft along, and it's not really an anything along. It's just a thing to encourage us all to better ourselves and, you know, set our goals to make our lives better and then to keep up with them. And a little bit of social support for that. And it's great. The thread is great. Post went up today about horseback riding, and I got all warm and fuzzy inside because horseback riding was my life when I was younger, and it was just made me happy. That's a goal I would like to bring back into my life at some point. It's not a thing for me right now, but one day it will be. Anyway, so we're coming to the end of the quarter for that. I don't know what we're gonna do as far as prizes or anything. We'll figure something out. But, whatever. The point is, keep on thinging along. It's not ending at the end of this quarter in June. It'll keep going. It's going indefinitely at this point. So, yeah. And with that, I hope you have a wonderful 2 weeks spending time with the people you love and the knitting that you love. I hope that your cat doesn't bite you, as mine is still threatening to do. And that you have a wonderful time. I'll talk to you later. Bye.